This week on the Thereabouts podcast, it's hallucinations, hill running, and home riding. I sat down with my little bro and fellow Thereabouts founder, Lachlan Morton, to talk about the year that was, the current lockdown situation, and what he is looking forward to in the future. Hi, hello, howdy, how are you going? Welcome to another episode of the Thereabouts podcast. I hope everyone is being safe and courteous out there, or in there, rather. I hope everyone's staying indoors and not unnecessarily outdoors, I guess. We have a fantastic show for you this week. Sitting halfway across the country is my good buddy, Isaac Carson. How's living? In the living room. Go on.
It's going well. You know, it's me and spending a lot of time with my plants, getting to know them. And and also, I guess, since we're doing these frequently, I should probably buy a microphone. I guess I could Amazon Prime it or something like that. But no one has complained about my audio yet, so no real rush.
Well, let's jump into this week's show. This week's guest, obviously, is my little brother and the fellow founder of Thereabouts, Lockie. Lock has been blazing a trail in the world of professional cycling since his number plate wearing days as a 20-year-old on the Garmin Sharp team to the cross-country vision quest that was Thereabouts to his genre-bending escapades with the EF Alternative Program.
And this episode really is all about the solo journey, experiencing the outdoors and just being with ourselves. It really has made all of us think about why the gravel and adventure scene really has taken off.
That's exactly it. And I got an opportunity as the quarantine has my whole family all together here in Colorado to pick Lockie's brain about, you know, what he rides and races for nowadays. The personal experience of racing events like the GB Giro and the Colorado Trail, as well as his mission to broaden people's perspective on what cycling is and can be, the issues facing the World Tour, and the changing value of an athlete in the evolving media climate. This was a bit of a roaming and pretty in-depth recap of the year, and it was great to get a little insight into where Lockie's at in his career and where he wants to go. Hope you enjoy.
Testing.
Yeah, mine's working.
It's recording.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about where we are and the current situation?
We're at home at my parents' house in the basement. And we're on lockdown, COVID lockdown.
And that's Mum and Dad. You can probably hear in the background. They're in the kitchen cooking dinner. We are indeed in lockdown. So Lockie, it's been an interesting sort of 18 months for you. I think it's pretty safe to say.
Yeah, last year was like the dream year. It was sort of a culmination of a lot of years of working out like my own place, I guess, in the sport and what I wanted to do. And then like an opportunity arose that just never comes along, you know? And it was sort of like right at that point where I'd done World Tour racing, I'd stepped away from it, and I was looking for like something in between and like that just sort of manifested. Not to say like it wasn't by chance, like there's a lot of work that went into it, but like there was the perfect like situation for me because I could race World Tour races and also like have the freedom to go do a bunch of new stuff that like I'd always wanted to do.
What excites you about racing your bike?
I mean, it's the unknown of it. It's like the men's elite professional road cycling is such a small slither of what bike racing is.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it gets like all the coverage, right? So if you say to, like, you know, a border agent, what do you do for a living? You say ride bikes. They say, oh, Tour de France, Lance Armstrong. Like, that's what people understand. And that's all I'd spent my career doing, was racing road bikes. So then, like, you see, you're on this, like, thin little layer of what cycling is. So you're stepping out into, like, this whole other world that exists out there, which is the way the majority of people experience bikes. So what excites me is, like, discovering that. So working what other people get out of it. Because, like, what we do is very performance-oriented. But the majority of people who ride bikes will never compete and have no ambitions to compete, you know? Even if they're taking part in these same events that, you know, we're racing, their goal is not to win. They're looking for something else. So, like, that's what I was hoping to get out of it, and ultimately did get out of it, was seeing what those people are getting out of riding bikes.
Can you just tell me a little bit about Cape Epic? Because that was going to be your first alternate race this year, and you went down there, event was cancelled, but you still had a pretty interesting experience.
Yeah. So Cape Epic was the first of the alternate calendar races. And it was like a huge bucket list race for me, still is. Haven't ticked it off because it's like the biggest mountain bike stage race in the world. And mountain biking is always something that's like intimidated me quite a lot. So yeah, to be able to like go and do that, like with the support that we had, and like, it's a huge opportunity to be able to do. And yeah, I was doing it with Alex, and it's sort of one of the first races that I saw outside of road racing, I guess, because it's like a mountain bike race that gets a huge amount of coverage. So yeah, I really wanted to go do it. So like I had like a chat with Tom before, and it was like, look, let's just go and see what happens. And we went. And the race got cancelled. So we came up. But yeah, we were down there for like a week before. Oh, not even, maybe 4 days. And then 2 nights before the race was supposed to start, it got cancelled.
And then on that, like, everything's been cancelled now, right? Like the whole world. What do you train for? Like, are you still training?
I'm probably not like a great representation of the majority of athletes because I don't really need a goal.
Yeah,
like it's, for me, I do it just for myself anyway. So like, it's not like, oh, now I'm like, oh shit, there's no, you know, cancer next month that I'm gonna be like, oh, I'm just gonna sit at home and watch Netflix and like, you know, like, oh, I got no goal. Like, I don't sort of need that purpose anymore. Yeah. So like, I still go out riding, and we're lucky enough here to be able to ride outside. So like, I've been out just sort of riding on my mountain bike, and I don't know, like it's annoying for sure in that like your life on the whole doesn't really have like a massive purpose, I guess. But I still enjoy getting out and riding because I don't really treat it as training much anymore. So like, yeah, in that regard, like, I'm probably not a good representation.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of athletes out there who are just now like, oh shit, you know, like.
And that's like, is like, have you, what is the sentiment amongst like other guys racing, other pro athletes? Are people like, you know, what's the sentiment
about? I think there's a lot of angst and a lot of worry because like, you know, like professional sport's not a necessary. It's not a necessary thing, right? It's entertainment. So like in a situation like this, the first thing that gets cut are things that are not necessary. And it's kind of, I guess it's probably confronting. Well, it is confronting to know that like your livelihood, kind of relies on you're just an entertainer, right? So like in a serious situation, your occupation is immediately just sort of obsolete. So as you said, like I think for a lot of athletes, like they lose the event and then they lose the goal and they lose the purpose. So it's like, shit, what am I doing? So I'm sure there's a lot of athletes out there right now who are going through that, like, angst and worry of, you know, not only... I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of athletes who, like, you know, have been waiting for the Olympics for 4 years and then maybe it was their last Olympics and that was their career kind of hinged on this, you know? So I think there's a lot of athletes out there and probably a lot more serious situation than we are currently in bike riding. I think we're sort of yet to see the real implications. But I don't think anyone really knows, like the situation's evolving really quickly.
Do you think that there is a greater role, I mean, in this current situation, but do you think that in, within society, right, like your the role of sport and your role, do you think there is something greater than just simply being something to watch, something to like pass the time?
Yeah, I mean, I think like sport is obviously, it's super important, right? For like a variety of reasons. But I think like a really big one is just like community. Because, you know, like it's, it brings together a bunch of people over like a very simple activity, whatever, if that means you follow a soccer team or you ride a bike or you're a runner who like does park run on a Saturday or it's like it's all community. So like when that gets taken away, I mean it's a huge, it's a loss. It's like a loss of identity. There's a lot that goes along with that. So I mean I think cycling, it's kind of unique right now in that like there's like the fact that there's like say Zwift.
Yeah.
Like the community can still exist, right?
And that so like seems to be that community seems to be thriving, right?
Yeah, the community's still there. And like I don't know, like we released the EF Gone Racing film today that doesn't have a race in it.
Yeah.
And there was still a whole bunch of people excited to get on there and watch it. Which I think is like I don't know, maybe that's like a representation of like the shifting sort of values in sport. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Do you think there's a shifting value in sport? Do you think, sorry, the values that people appreciate about sport are shifting and the things that they want to see in athletes and want to see in sport is changing?
I think people just want to participate in sport now. It's not enough to watch it, you know? I think that's why, like, cycling on the whole is becoming more popular. And that's not necessarily reflected in, like, professional racing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, like, I don't know, it's not enough to just watch a bunch of really high-paid, like, super talented guys go out there and do their thing. Like I don't think people get enough out of that anymore. And people want to be involved, and people want the challenge. Doesn't mean there's not a place for the professional athlete because they want to also compare themselves to, like the elite. But
is it more than just results though? Now, like it's not like you're not looking at,
yeah. You
know, like for example, like Lance Armstrong, right? Was incredibly popular during his career,
yeah.
Despite like being pretty controversial and like pretty cutthroat. Do you, like, you know, so everyone loved him because he was dominant.
Yeah.
Is that, do you, I mean, I feel like that's changing. Does that, is that sentiment passed on with your relationship with fans? And
yeah, I mean, I think so. I think people also like in the age of social media, really people can get a much bigger insight into people's personality and the way they go about doing what they do, which I think people You know, I mean, if you use, say, Armstrong as an example, if you want to use that example, you know, you didn't really, all you got to really see then at that time was the race that, that happened, totally. Right? And the documentaries that Discovery Channel put out or whatever. Yeah. So you never really got to see the way he went about doing what he did. And then when people found out the way he went about doing what he did, a lot of people were shocked, you know, because they were looking at it purely from
totally
an outside perspective. It was all managed,
yeah.
Whereas now you live in a world where, like, you know, there's so much engagement with fans on a day-to-day level through social media that they can see the way you go about the way you do things, right? You know?
Yeah, so like, got you. So, like, work ethic and things like that.
Work ethic, like, if you're, like, that having real fun, picture. If you're, like, super, you know, strict, boring, or, like, whatever, they sort of see the way you go about doing it, which, like...
So, they're seeing personality.
Yeah, exactly. So, when you looked at, like... I think that's why, like, a team like Sky got so much pushback initially, is that they tried to, like, put up that screen again of, like, well, it's only results that matter, so, like... We're not going to let you guys in at all. So we're going to give you the 30-second interview at the door of the bus each day. But we're not going to let you see inside of the process.
So it's like the tide shifted from... The balance of power shifted from, like, the athlete being the most important thing in sport to now it being back to being the fan and, like, what value the greater society or greater community is getting from...
Yeah,
from the sport and the event.
I think so. Like, I think people value the result is still important. It doesn't like,
absolutely, yeah.
But I think people value now even more so the way you go about getting that result.
Yeah, got you.
Which is why, like in my opinion, if you look at someone like Riggo,
yep,
he's the most valuable guy in cycling, right? You know, because he not only does he kick ass, but like. He's just an absolute character and a legend.
Totally. And like, I mean, he doesn't kick ass as much as some other bike riders.
No.
But he's, like you said, valuable. Like he is, like exactly. Any team would kill to have him.
Yeah. And for the results he's able to produce in the way he goes about getting them is insane. Like that ratio, if he could like put a ratio on it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He's hitting the golden mean.
Insane, right?
Yeah.
But like... The way he goes about getting them, you're like, well, all right, if like,
yeah,
who knows? If I lived in Tenerife for 6 months a year, who
knows what's yeah, exactly. The, it's the coolness to performance ratio.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like,
well, is it? Yeah, and it's just like the way you go about doing things.
Yeah,
is important, and now I think that's like you can see that, right? Like you get a much better idea of. Than you used to be able to like 10 years ago.
And then on that, right, so we're in this situation right now where the world shut down. A lot of stuff is going to be reset after this. You know, like the Tour de France, all that shit, like it's all fucked up. So the world tour, I mean, just the world in general, right, it will be different after this. Having said what, like having this discussion just now, like what do you want or if you could choose, right, how do you want to see the... World Tour kick back off? What role do you want to see, you know, what you describe as a really thin slither of representation of the sport or representation of riding a bike? Like, what would you change? How do you want to see, you know, keep going the way it was? Like, what's, you know, exciting for you if you were able to make that?
Yeah, like, that if change? You're looking purely at, like, men's road cycling... Like what needs to change? It's such a hard question, right? Because there's so many different factors, and that like you look at like the model of the team sponsorship, and then you look at like the power that ASO has, and then like what the UCI. Yeah, the issue I think in like men's professional cycling is like this: the main stakeholders like have nothing to gain by changing the status quo, right?
Yep.
In that, like, they are so very happy to have, like, the Tour de France just stay the biggest race in the world because, of course, they would, right? Yeah. They own it. It's a hugely successful event. And if you look at, like, the Tour de France in isolation, you're like, it's great, right? Like he wouldn't change anything. It's like that's what the history of the sport is. And the tough thing I think with road cycling is like there's so much tradition, which is what it makes the sport so appealing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that there is like these ties to like a really old era, and like the history of the races is often like they've been running for 100 years and similar course, you know. So like
this heritage.
There's a heritage that like is it's invaluable to like the sport, but it's also what holds it back, right? So it's a really tough I don't have the answer to it. But I think the more you can celebrate all facets of cycling, it should balance itself out. So if you can celebrate what the majority of people are doing on their bikes by participating and bringing some of that coverage from men's racing to other events and mm-hmm. highlight other things that are going on, if there's a broader balance of that coverage, then everyone will be forced to adapt in different areas, right? Because it won't be like if all the coverage is skewed one way and there's a few people who are making money who have the power, it's not going to change. So like
yeah, it's not going to be egalitarian.
Yeah, so if you can sort of be involved in that and then be like, okay, but let's also shine a light over here at what all these other people are doing on bikes, maybe that'll generate enough interest. And it's starting to, there's more people riding off-road. And like there's events like Kanza and Leadville that are starting to really kick ass, you know? So then like what happens at the World Tour level? Like they put 50Ks of dirt into Paris Tours.
Yeah.
Like maybe that's a small thing, and it is, but like
it's something.
That was a pure like, you know, knee-jerk reaction from being like, oh, gravel racing.
Yeah, we need gravel in it.
You know, so like it's a small, if they see that like, you know, there's more and more people looking in other places away from road cycling, they're like, well, we need to adapt. So that's sort of, that's how, I mean, I don't have any other answers apart from like, I think if you can just broaden, you know, the spectrum of engagement of road fans, mountain bike fans, everyone. So they just look at it as bike riding. That balance will like take care of itself, I think.
And on that, right? So talking about that, you obviously did something along those lines last year, right? Where you went and raced a bunch of different races. What racing last year were you most challenged by, intrigued with? Like, can you speak a little bit about some of the moments that you had that are memorable from that last year of racing, you know, like...
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, it's a really hard question to answer because everyone wants to know that, like, which race did you enjoy the most?
I'm most unique moments is probably a better way. Like,
but, like, it's an interesting question because it's, like, it totally makes... It's a normal question to ask, right? Because, like, exactly. People want to be like, what have I got to get? Have I got to get a dual suspension mountain bike or do I need a gravel bike? Or if I gotta get bags, you know,
exactly.
Like,
do I want to do Three Peaks or do I want to do the
Ultra? Only do one.
Yeah.
You know? So what's like, the best? Which one's the best? And it's like
I want the Ferrari.
It's impossible to say because they're all very different experiences. So like the only way I can really go about explaining is to just go through them all.
Yeah.
Like so, initially there was Kanza, which was wild, you know, because like. A, it's like a 300K day out and it's a race and it's all off-road. Well, there's like 5Ks on road.
Yeah.
Which like, that's not the story. The story is the fact that, you know, there's like 2,000 other people out there taking this huge day on.
Yeah.
You know, like whether they're ready or not, they're taking it on. And they're all just out there on like a vision quest, you know, there's like 50 guys who are racing. And then, you know,
the rest
like,
are like doing their own.
Exactly. Everyone's just getting around, you know. There's some people who are from Emporia who that's the day they spend on a bike every year, you know.
Yeah, no shit. Like they just don't like, even ride at all. And they're like, I'll just
stay out.
Fuck that.
Like 320K.
That makes me nervous thinking about that.
Yeah. And it's like, there's a lot of things that can break on your bike. There's a lot of stuff that can happen.
A lot of human spirit that can be broken into.
Yeah, and like you're out there by yourself, you know? Like, so I think what I, the community element is what I remember most about Kanza. Cool, and that you, there was just this huge energy and like shared experience that I'd never felt at another cycling event. You know, it's kind of felt like being at like, you know, a music festival when it's like one of the last shows of the night.
Yeah,
and everyone comes around the stage and like it's just like everyone's on the same level.
Yeah,
it's like that feeling, but at a bike event.
Dude, like a healthy music festival.
Yeah, and then plus you've got like this huge like community of people in the town who are like benefiting from having this bike race, which like are people who, you know, 10 years ago probably couldn't care less for cyclists. Whereas
probably,
now it's like a
the
huge
first edition
lifeline.
Of the race, they're probably like, what the fuck is this? Like,
yeah.
This sucks.
And now they love
it.
Yeah. And it's great. And I, like the way I like to say it, it'd be like if, you know, you went to like Broken Hill in Australia and held a bike race. Except
yeah,
like,
really.
Normally you'd be afraid to wear Lycra there, but then, you know, you've got all these people who love it.
For those non-Australian listeners, Broken Hill is like a iconic town. They kind of film Mad Max around there in the far western region of New South Wales. It's rural, but like it's like out in the desert. It's got like a ton of character, like some cool old pubs
and
like
Lycra around.
Exactly. You're not cruising into the pub in a pair of Knicks or like, you know.
Yeah.
So, okay. That's Dirty Cancer.
Yeah.
The next was GB Giro.
Yeah. And GB Giro was hugely influential on me in that I'd always read about ultras, never understood it.
Mm.
Thought it was stupid. Slowly came around to the idea of like, well, there's obviously something to it. And then it's like, all right, let's give one a go. Because something like that, you can't, and it's the same issue I have right now, is you can't explain it until you do it, right?
Yeah,
and
totally.
So I jumped into it. and when I jumped into it, I thought I was very prepared. And now, no, I was not really prepared at all.
Do you think you could ever be prepared for something like that, though?
Not first time around,
yeah.
I don't think. Because it's all mental. I think I was lucky in that I'd spent a lot of time by myself riding. which means you spend a lot of time in your own head. So you could be aware of what's going on in your own brain.
Yeah, it's not like you're just uncovering a new room in the brain.
No.
It's like the basement and you're like, oh shit.
Yeah, but I will say that once you went tick past like 12 hours on the bike, it's a totally new room you're going into.
Yeah.
And then you tick past like 24 hours and it's like a whole new fucking garage you didn't know you had downstairs. Like,
yeah, exactly. There's a second level there. To the basement.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, shit, all these bodies down here.
Yeah.
I didn't know I killed anyone. So like that, in that regard, like that was wild. And so like the mental aspect of that one was huge. And I've got a huge amount of respect for anyone who takes those on. But the idea of being like self-sufficient on your bike and being able to travel huge distances on like all kinds of terrain and have everything you need just contained in like a few small bags was like a huge game changer. And that like to being able to realize you can just sustain yourself.
Yeah.
Like by the time I got for 4 days, I was like, oh, I could just keep going. You know, like,
yeah, right.
I've
so you got
everything
to a point
I need.
You ticked over. And you're just like, this is my life now.
Totally. Well, and you're like, I have everything I need here. And you kind of, it's weird in that the race is taking place in normal life, right? You're just traveling through people
going
regular,
to work and shit like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. So most people are going for, and you're on this like epic, you know, adventure. But like, and you stop at like a grocery store to like buy some bananas or something. People look at you like, what's that?
Exactly.
You smell like shit and whatever. And they're just like, you know, on their way to work getting like a sandwich from like the refrigerator. Like, So in that regard, you're kind of like, oh, well, you can just kind of exist on the outside of society, I guess, with like a bike and like a few things in a bag and just go. And you know, like, you don't, there's no, like, my idea of like what the limitations were was just blown out of the park. That's what I really took away from that. Because I'm like, shit, you could just, you could go forever.
Theoretically.
You know, like, and I, like, I felt better and better as I went and was going faster and faster and like mentally felt a lot better by the last day. Like, there's a whole bunch of things that happened that you're just like, shit, you could just keep going. So like, so you went really from like the simple first day being like, shit, counting down the hours to the end of the stage to like the last day when you were just like, shit, I'm getting closer. Like, it's all going to be over.
Do I really want this
to end? I don't want it to finish, right? So like...
And do you think there's... Do you think like there's something in that that like... In that simplicity... Because I know like anyone who does ultras, they talk about that a lot. Like, do you think that that's something that, you know, everyone should try? Like that paring back of your entire life to, as you said, a couple of bags and like doing something like that?
Well, I think you just take stock of like things that are very important, right?
Yeah.
And it starts with like, say it's gear, right? You have a good jacket, replaces like five other useless products.
Yeah.
A good undershirt means that you don't need that other jersey, or like, so like when you look at it like from like a basic principle, it's like get, have like good quality things, not a lot of things. Things you know work versus shit that you know you thought you should have just because someone like else gimmicks, had it.
Yeah.
But then that goes to like a another level, and you then like, because you get into your own head, so you look at like your own relationships, or, and you're like, well, there's all this bullshit around like all these things I do. So like in a relationship, you're like, well, why do I bother with all this other shit when it's just like, this is all I'm really looking for, right? Why don't I just say what I mean?
Or like, yeah, got you.
Or like, why do I spend time on this person?
Yeah.
Or why do I not spend more time on this person, right? So that's a like, it's like a cleaning out process.
It's like a defrag.
Yeah. So I found afterwards that like, I threw out a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
Like, I have a lot less things now.
Tell me about our, we've got Scottish heritage, right? Tell me about crossing into Scotland, because I think that's like a funny, just tell that story.
Yeah. I went into Scotland and I felt like I was at home. Like, it was weird. I had like a lot of, not anxiety, like you just kind of like this nagging feeling until I got to Scotland that like there was going to be some catastrophic event that just made this journey impossible, you know, and that I wouldn't be able to overcome it.
Yeah.
And then like I went into Scotland and that kind of like slowly dissipated and it was all weirdly familiar and like the surroundings and everything, I was like, ah, oh, shit, this is also terrain and like countryside and people and like food that I like, weirdly.
And you'd never been.
So, and then like it was weird, like once I got to Scotland, I was like, ah, oh, I could really push up here, you know what I mean?
Could really get stuck in.
Yeah, I could really get stuck in and get crazy up here, nothing bad will happen.
And then tell me, the next race was
Leadville. Yeah, which Leadville was great in that it's very similar to Cairns in that like you look at what it does to a community, and to be able to see what like a cycling event can do for a community, in that, you know, Leadville was like super down and out town. They lost the mine, you know, had like the highest alcohol and abuse rates in the country, and then someone brought in a running race that turned into a series that now involves a bike race, and that like turned the whole community around, you know. So now a lot of that community sort of revolves around like these endurance athletic events, and to see what that can do was like amazing. And then personally, like getting into, well, at least dipping the toe into a mountain bike event. I wouldn't say, yeah. I'd say it's an interesting event in that it's right between like where road riders and like mountain bike riders makes like a really nice matchup.
Yeah.
So yeah, that it was like awesome day out. Amazing event. Would definitely recommend it to anyone. It's tough. It's really high altitude. And it's a big day out. But for me, that sort of planted the seed of like, I'd like to do more mountain biking. Because I think Alex and I surprised ourselves a bit on the more technical terrain in that, you know, we were in the ballpark.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It was like, oh, we haven't done much work on this. We're not that far. Like, maybe we can, which is what planted the seed for Cape Epic. So, yeah, I mean, that is just kind of, I guess for me, it was the most familiar event because I spent a lot of time in Colorado, spent a lot of time in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So, in that regard, I knew what to expect more. So I wouldn't say I took it for granted more. Maybe I just knew it a bit more, you know. I'd started the race once before. But I really want to go back.
Yeah.
It's weird, like the Leadville's the one that it's like a race I want to go back and win. Like I feel like on a very competitive level I'm like I want to win that one. I don't know why. That's a thing, but I'm like, I feel like that one's a winnable one.
Where'd you finish this year?
I was third.
So you're not far off.
No. I was second, and then I was racing with Howard Grotz.
Yep.
Who's won Cape Epic. He's from Durango. He's won Leadville 3 times, I think. And we hit the last climb, which is Powerline together. And he just rode away.
Yeah.
There was nothing I could do. And it was like slow motion. You know, like he just rode away and I knew it was happening. And you're just like, shit. And I was already thinking about, like at the moment I was getting dropped, I was already thinking about how I would do it differently next time. You know, like that.
Yeah, got you. Yeah.
Like so that like, present of mind. You know, like I knew it was going to happening. Nothing I could do about it. But I'm like, what would I do next time?
Yeah, got you.
And they disappeared out of sight. And then I'm like, lost concentration for a while and sort of forgot I was in a race. And then I got caught by Quinn Simmons.
Yeah.
I was like, oh shit, I'm racing again.
Yeah.
It was going. And then Quinn Simmons wouldn't give me a turn.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's like, ah, oh, I'm tired. I'm like, you caught me, mate. Like, and then Stettner came up and I owed Stettner one from Kansas.
Yeah.
Because like when Howes and I, the only chance old mate had ridden away, Colin Strickland.
Yeah.
And there's Howes, Stetter and I chopping off behind. The only chance we had was if we all chopped off to get him back. And then Howes had like a slow leak. So he was just stopping to like hit it with gas or plug it. And it was like, yeah, okay. And then Pete kept going.
Oh, really? So he just didn't.
Yeah, so like he was like at that moment he decided he's like, oh, I'm gonna snag second.
I'm taking second. I'm not giving up.
No chance of win.
Yeah.
So then like when Pete caught up at the end of Leadville, I was like, the difference between like second and third is small. Difference between third and fourth is big.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm gonna follow you, Pete, and I'm gonna ride around you with 100 meters to go.
Yeah,
that's all I'm gonna do.
Yeah,
like Quinn Simmons, you can have a second. Like I don't care. Like, I'm coming around, Pete, and that's exactly what I did. Got him a beauty, and knew he got that too. You know, like afterwards he was just like, "Damn it!" Like, yeah, gotcha. You know, like owed you that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Then after that, the last event was Three Peaks.
Yep.
Which is like a weird combination of all of the other events. So it's super grassroots. It's in the UK. And you do like a 3-hour cyclocross race over Three Peaks. And a lot of it's not rideable. Like you do a lot of running.
Yeah. And you just carry your bike.
Carry your bike. It's like stone paths. Then there's some road sections. So it's just this weird mix. And it's basically, it's a ridiculous course to race. And you have to do it on a cyclocross bike with no bigger than 33C tyres.
Gotcha.
So like to put it in a nutshell, it's like on the road sections, you want a road bike. Up the hills, you don't want any bike. You'd rather just be running.
Yeah.
And then on the downhills, you want like a dual suspension, proper something with a dropper post on it.
Yeah, because it's like fucking
because it's like rocky. And so basically, you've never got the right tool for the job, but you got to take this bike around the whole thing. And it's deadly serious. Like people who race it, you race it. And you race it hard. You don't like take the piss. And the whole thing, like it seems ridiculous, but there's this whole community built around it.
Yeah.
And like the community element of it was sick. You know, like there's people like building like tiny little parts for their bikes and like doing all this shit because it's like Peaks comes around once a year and it's like they're always like, just honing in, and then it's like understanding the course. So like, no, this shortcut, like this little bit.
So like shortcut, like you can kind of cut the course.
Yeah, there's legitimate shortcuts. You'll be running up a hill. It's
like a video game kind
of. Yeah, you'll be running up the hill, and then all of a sudden you see one dude way over on this, like, you know, 100 meters to your left, like hugging this, you know, stone wall. And you're like, holy shit, where's he? Like, what's this? And then he'll pop out like up over, and then all of a sudden he's like,
because so it's just kind of like get from A to B, like
yeah, you've got like checkpoints sort of thing.
Yeah, got you.
So like on the downhill, on the first downhill, it was so foggy and whatever. I had to wait for people to so I knew where I was going. Like,
oh really? There's no marking or anything.
Well, there is, but it's like it's hard. You know, like there's not a GPX file, and like you're just like out there, like the one. I think the guy who was in second or third, like. He went 10 minutes the wrong way.
Oh, really? Like, yeah, you just fully... Just so the course changes each year?
No, it doesn't change.
But you just forget.
But it's like, yeah, it's you're not, and you can't ride it. You're
maxed out. Oh, got you.
Except for the day.
Got you. Yeah,
like, okay. They're not riding paths. You're not regularly allowed to ride a bike there. So, yeah, that was amazing. I think when I was, like, really proud of my performance there because it was, like... a year before I would have been useless, you know. Yeah, it was kind of like a culmination of like a bunch of things, and I wasn't super prepared. I just kind of was really just jumping into it,
yeah,
and I like handled it well. You know, like, and yeah, I was like afterwards I was like
proud
I would
of myself,
have been I would have buddy. Really shit the bed here like a year ago.
And why, like, what changed? What did you
just
start
like
doing?
The ability to adapt to the situation and realizing that like you can't control a lot of the
elements. So it's kind of mental.
So it's just constantly just like, okay, how can I get the most out of myself right now?
Yeah,
you know, like right now, like sort of, and then like bike skills, a few different things that like I'd picked up, but yeah, mainly mental of just like just sort of being much more present. And just like instead of being like you know, turning through the field and then looking at the hill and being like, fuck this, you can't ride a bike up here, this is stupid, and just like,
yeah, got you.
Even in that thought you lost 5 seconds, you know, when you could have just stepped off and already been running.
And do you think that
so like those things helped me?
And do you think that served you as well, like in the more traditional racing?
Yeah, for sure. Because it simplified it a lot, because you just kind of look at the demands of the event or the situation you're in, and you're just like, all right, let's have it this, you know, whatever it is, as opposed to like feeling like you're part of this like big machine of tradition and like all this shit that you kind of just do because it's like
you're meant to
habit, you know. You get back into a road race and you just kind of look at it more simply. You're like, okay, 4 hours out here, got this job to do. I don't know.
And then tell me about, I guess, like, what do you... Well, another thing you did as well, which I think is worth noting, is the Colorado Trail, because that was, like... Ooh. That seemed like that was pretty rude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the hardest thing I did, by far. by a long way. Yeah, I decided to do the Colorado Trail. it kind of came out of after GB Duro, I just had this like want to do more of that. And I was going to be back in Colorado, so I started looking at routes and whatever. And then I saw the Colorado Trail, which looked like the most sort of challenging route that I could do in the sort of time frame I had.
Yeah.
And initially I wanted to do the, there's a race that starts every year from, it started at different ends, but it was starting in Durango, but I had to do Utah and Leadville, yeah, and like it just didn't work out time wise. So then I just decided to do it as a, you can do it as what's called like a time trial.
Yeah.
And I linked that with a charity in Oz to raise some money, which gave me like a good motivation to do it. And yeah, it's basically, it's like 750K, I think, across the Rockies. And on a bike, you can do all, but I think it's 150K.
Okay.
And it's proper, it's, the average is over 3,000 meters.
Yeah, no, average altitude.
Average altitude is over 3,000 meters. You spend a lot of time like right up high.
Yeah.
And basically the clock just runs. And I didn't really have any intentions of like going for the record. Because I understand what goes into those things. And I think the guy who's got it did it 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, really.
Getting to where he did. And they do it on almost no sleep, which I didn't want to do in that sort of environment. And even still, with all those things, I was way over my head for a lot of... way over my head.
Like how? Like what? Like what was, what made that so much more difficult than... Obviously, the altitude, but like just situationally, what made it so much more difficult than GB Duro?
You're a long way from help.
Yeah, got there. You.
It's like it's a, you. It's isolated, so you feel, and it's very real, like consequences to mistakes. You know, so like, I think like the first night. So you do like the section from Durango to Silverton went pretty smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Was like cruising along ahead of where I thought I'd be. I was like, oh, this is great. And from there to Mount Princeton Hot Springs is like, I want to say it's 250K, 270K with nothing. So you basically resupply there.
Yeah.
And I was in a good mood when I did that, just like quickly in the servo, grabbed a bunch of shit, like ate a sandwich and headed out. And then I hadn't even properly researched the course. Because then you went on to this section where you're sort of just teetering between like 3,500 and 4,000 meters for like 40, 50K.
And you riding all that, or are you walking? Or?
Lots of walking, lots of slow going. There's no way of knowing how long the next 5 or 10K is going to take.
Yeah, fuck.
Sometimes so takes an hour. Sometimes takes half an hour. So that really breaks you mentally because you have this idea of where you're going to be. And so like, I didn't really have much of a plan. And I was like, oh, I feel fine. I'll just keep going. And then I got to the point when I probably wanted to sleep, which was around midnight, I guess. And that was at the high point of the whole thing. I was at like over 13,000 feet.
And you're like, oh, and you, in your mind, that's where you'd plan to sleep.
Well, just that time.
Oh, got you. Yeah, you were like, okay, I was like, I'm going to go until midnight. Sleep
on like the summit of this.
No, fucking no. It's
freezing midnight.
Yeah.
And you also can't breathe, right? So you're like, you're not going to sleep there.
No, exactly.
So then I was like, shit, this is not good. You know, like,
is that all you thought?
This is a bad situation, so I got to keep going. And also like just knowing that like I'd packed pretty light, so I was like, I'd get away, like if I got into trouble and had to sleep here, I probably could, but it'd be very uncomfortable.
And like, what were you talking when you say you were packed light? Like, did you have a bag?
I had like an emergency bivvy and one of those super light, like Soul, oh fuck, what are they? Cedar Summit.
Shit bags. Out of luck. Oh yeah, like it's, yeah.
So very light. They're good, but like, not enough. Yeah. Not enough for like -5 or whatever it was up there.
And you'd be wet too, like.
So, yeah, sweaty. So anyway, I like pushed on. And then I was in a situation where I was like, fuck, I'd rather have stopped by now just because of how the terrain is.
Mm.
Like big drops. The lights I had weren't ideal. And so like there was a lot of shit that you're just kind of second guessing like whether I can ride it or not. And you know a lot of it's not rideable.
Yeah.
So you're kind of coming up on stuff like,
yeah, like what am I doing?
Can I ride it? And then you're sort of scrambling. And then, so I did that for a couple of hours until I got low enough to where I could sleep. I was also out of water. So then I, like it was, there was a creek there, filled up some water, tried to sleep there. And then thought there was a bear. So I was in the bag for like maybe 45 minutes.
Oh, really?
And then thought there was a bear.
Was there?
No, it was a cow. They graze up that high, which I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. That would be scary. That would be scary.
Yeah, I could hear there was an animal moving.
Yeah.
And then, like, also, like, right at that moment, as I was like, shit, there's a bear. It was and it was cold in the bag because I was wet, you know. So I was like, shit. I had that realization, you're like, I'm going to have to get out of here. It's going to be freezing. I've got to stuff everything in my bag. Also, there might just be a bear. And then I, like, was doing that. And then I was like, and I need to shit right now. So, and like you've got bibs on. So like have to get all the way down to that base layer.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Like looking around like, oh, is there a bear? So yeah, that was the time. And then, yeah, like just that next, only that next day I was quiet because I hadn't slept as much as I wanted to.
Yeah.
And then, the terrain was really challenging and I just didn't, I wasn't well researched enough. So like I didn't know what was coming. So it took me longer to get to Mount Princeton than I thought it would. But I had to keep going because I was going to run out of food.
Yeah.
So like I was at this like catch 22. So I spent like a good like 4 or 5 hours hallucinating. Massively to get to Mount Princeton.
What were your hallucinations?
Very just like normal to start with. I was like
very normal.
No, I mean it's weird. You like I find that the hallucinate. Everyone's like, oh, hallucinations. Like you're out of your mind. You know, a lot of the time you, for me anyway, you're very aware
that you're hallucinating.
It's hallucinating. Well, the first thing that happened was I was coming up this trail, and then I knew there was like maybe 30K to get to where I had to be. And I knew it was going to take a really long time. And I'd already had like a mini breakdown. I was like, okay, I'm going to get there. And then I was like, oh, Hunter on the trail, I'm going to ask him how far it is. Like, because I was only estimating.
Yeah.
Like, he'll know. He came up and I was like, oh, shit, he's gone. And I was like, oh, he left all these fucking suitcases here on the side of the trail. And then I was like, wait, suitcases. Hunters don't have suitcases. And then I was like, looked closer. I'm like, they're rocks. They're not. And I was like, ah, oh, here it comes. So it begins.
You know, there's easier ways to hallucinate than that. Yeah. You don't have to like.
And then it was like all these, there's these little white rocks that like in that area, mm-hmm. they're all along the trail. You have these little white rocks that pope out. And then it's like, they were all these little white dogs, like those fluffy little like chihuahuas.
Oh, the worst sort of dogs.
Yeah, you know those annoying ones with the hair in the face? Nice. Those ones. And then like all the trees as they were coming by, like on the side of the trail, that was all like army men standing. Like facing
army men.
Yeah, you know, like as if they were like
modern
lined
army
up.
Men or like
Yeah, modern army men. Oh no, probably more like World War II.
Yeah, gotcha.
Like and then just like facing in, but I was very aware that I'm just like, it's just my brain is tired, so it's looking at things it doesn't quite understand, and it's just making like an easy reroute to like,
yeah, it's just trying to make
familiar.
Sense. That's a really interesting way of looking at.
Well, that's all it's happening.
I've never thought about it. Yeah, no,
you're
totally
just like
right.
Your brain's looking at something,
trying
it's
to make
too
sense
tired. It's trying to like, and it can't like, it's like, you know, like an old computer, just like,
yeah.
So it's just like, oh, if I just make all these little white rocks or white dogs, that's done. And then, you know,
gotcha. Like, it's just like,
so like, once you understand that, you're path like, of oh, least resistance. Fine.
But then you're like, where the fuck did the
arm? But then I was like, if there's from? A mountain lion actually on the trail, then I might just like treat it like it's not there.
Yeah, exactly.
In that, so like, it wasn't like, I never got into a situation where I was like, this is downright like stupid dangerous. But I was just enough out of my like comfort zone for a long period of time that I was like, all right, the second, like there was in my head at that point, I was like, there's no chasing the record. There's no like,
yep.
Even though at that point, I think I was a pretty long way up on it, but it was more out of just the necessity to get.
Get because you just fucked up. Yeah.
I was like, when I get there and I got there and I was like, I'm going to sleep 8 hours and like had a meal. And I was like, I might not even go tomorrow. Like, I'm that fucked up. I had trench foot. Like, everything was broken. But then I slept 8 hours, got up and was like, oh, actually, not bad. You know, like, how about it?
Get back after it.
And then, yeah, so the next day, then I was cruising along pretty good. But the, I guess the nail in the coffin the next day is I dropped my spot tracker.
Oh.
Which is like the GPS device that, so everyone knows where you are. That's like the
official recording device, yeah.
It's official recording device, but more so it's like there's an oh shit button on it that like...
Oh, that like sends out an SOS.
If you get into proper trouble, you hold that down and then hold it down again and then the cavalry come.
Yeah.
Like obviously if you're a long way, it's going to take them a while to get there, but they know you're in trouble. But they know
you're there, yeah.
And like, you know, mum, dad, Rach could all see where I was.
Yeah.
But I lost that. Like somewhere and didn't realize for a really long time to the point where I, by the time I'd realized I'd lost it, I was like, shit, where is that? And then kind of fucked around, rode back and was like, wait, I got no idea when I last saw it. And then didn't have phone reception to check the recording online to see where it was.
Where it had lost.
So I just had to make the call of like, oh, I'll just continue on.
Mm.
And I pushed on to Copper Mountain. Regularly, I felt good enough. I would have just kept going if I had the tracker. Had the track. So like, but I just knew that like everyone would be worried.
Yeah,
you know, and also that if I did get into trouble, there was no safety net. So I slept again at Copper Mountain. And then the next day, I started rolling. Same thing was like, our record's way gone.
Yeah,
and then you have to do this hike, which if anyone has ever done or is going to ever do, keep in mind the hike from Copper over to Breck. You just walk. You just walk for 3 hours or whatever, or 2 hours. It was from Copper over to the road there at Breck is like 20K, and I did it in 3 hours.
Yeah, oof.
With the downhill. So that was the start to the day. So you're just kind of trudging through that.
It's just like, a good I'm morning.
Going nowhere, you know, and you know you're not going to stop until you get to the finish.
Yeah.
So you have this idea in your head. You're like, I've got 250 or whatever k's it is to do, and you're like, I've just done 20 in 3 hours. You're like, Christ. And then I just like I picked up a tailwind, and like the legs came round, and then like I just started ripping. Like I just had this second wind, and I was just like in the zone, and like finally worked out just kind of how the trail worked, and like it was a lot more rideable, and it just clicked. Same thing, it's like that day three
just yeah, like got you, yeah, clicked. You came into it
and then I just started honing in on I started doing the calculations in my head, and I was just like, holy shit, if I keep this pace up, it's gonna be super tight.
Oh, like you still might get the record.
Yeah. But only like halfway through the day, I was just like, I'm ripping. Wait, hang on a minute. Like, this is going to be close. You know, yeah. Like, if I keep on it, like, I'm in with a shout here.
Yeah.
And was ripping. And I was like, oh, this is going to be tight, you know. And then in the last 4 hours, I finally fell apart.
Yeah, got you.
And, like, had a stupid fall, smashed my light. So then I only had a headlamp, and I knew the headlamp I had, I only had like 3 hours of
Oh, battery,
battery
life.
On it. So I was trying to run it on the low.
Oh, so it's like hard to see.
It's hard to see. Really trying to go fast. And then like right as it was super dimming, I saw a mountain lion.
Oh, you actually saw one?
Yeah, two in a den.
So it wasn't a hallucination?
No, actually, I was of sound mind.
Dude, imagine if you like you thought you saw a cow, but you were just it was a mountain. You were hallucinating that it was a cow. You're like, oh, it's fine. It's a cow, but it was actually a mountain lion.
And then I was
no one ever thinks that way.
Like I just needed to be done. And so then once your brain goes to that, you start getting really slow and sloppy.
Yeah.
And then my light fully died, so I only had my iPhone.
Dude, I've done that before. That fucking sucks.
And I pulled out the duct tape and just
taped it to the front.
Bag. And couldn't see shit. And I missed the record by like 2 hours. Like totally chipped the
bag. Dude, that's pretty wild though, considering like the way you explain that, it's like it's a clusterfuck, but then you still went pretty close.
The thing with Colorado Trail is now there's not like a week that goes by that I don't think about exactly how I would go back and do it.
Go back and do it, yeah. But and are you going to?
The obsession. Like speaking to people who have done it, I think it takes a really long time to get it.
Yeah. are you going to go back and...
I think I will one day.
Yeah.
Like I'm not in a rush because I was humbled by it massively.
And what else... Last, before we wrap up here, what motivates you? What do you want to accomplish in cycling? Like, you know, what's left for you to do, or not left, but you know what I mean?
The thing is, it's like all the, like the races that we did in the last year, it just kind of opened a can of worms in that, like, there was a lot that, If I thought about road cycling, the list of like things I want to do before I finish is quite short. It's not insignificant. Yep. I'd really like to ride the Tour de France.
Yeah.
Right? Like everyone would love to do that. Or to win like a World Tour race of some kind.
Yeah.
Stage, whatever. Outside of that, like, it's hard to think of, I don't know. It's a pretty short list of things. But now that... And, it's like, up things. Until last year, that was really it. Whereas now, like, just on the top of my head, there's, like, 4 or 5 events I can think of that I want to do in the next few years.
What are they? Cape Epic?
Cape Epic. Tour Divide.
Yep.
Silk Mountain.
Yep.
Race to the Rock. I'd really like to win Leadville.
Yep.
That's just like me thinking now. But like outside of that, there's still a whole bunch of things. And then like there's even just like I just have ideas like just routes and stuff we could do. Like like creating new routes and like setting times and I don't know, that sort of aspect of still like competitive in a sense, but it's very different than requires a very different skill set than what I'm used to. So I guess that motivates me in that I feel like a novice again in a lot of ways.
Yeah, got you. You know? So it's like
having like, gone to like
even you're excited just, about not being good at.
Yeah, yeah. Like not, even turning up good, to Cape Epic, you know I mean. This time and it didn't happen, and then being like, holy shit, these guys rip.
Yeah.
You know, yep. So like the last 2 weeks, I've just been riding my mountain bike as much as I can and like working on skills because that like excites me, right? So like the idea that it's just because you'd worked out road cycling doesn't qualify for any of these other events.
So it's like it's the challenge that you're excited by, it seems. Yeah. Not necessarily the victory. It's not like, oh, sweet, on the road, I'm now, you know, accomplished and skilled enough there that I can legitimately win these races. It's like, no, I'd rather go and like spend time figuring out this other
aspect
of the sport.
Totally. Because that's like, that's the most rewarding part is when you like acquire a new skill and then put it into practice and then find yourself doing something that, you know, whatever it was 12 months before you would have said it was impossible for you.
Yeah.
Like, that's so rewarding. It's more rewarding than, like, a race win, you know? Like even last year, I fully forget often that I won a stage at Utah.
Well, yeah, you didn't. I forgot that too.
Yeah, but like often people are like, "Oh yeah, Utah," and I'm like, "Holy shit, yeah, yeah, that was in there."
Now it's like your first week road before, win for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
week before Colorado Trail, that's probably why I forgot.
Exactly, you probably did some.
Yeah, did some damage. Tissue but damage. Yeah, I don't know. That to me is more rewarding.
Yeah.
Just like that's where I'm at the moment.
Nice, man. Well, thank you very much. I guess we'll check back in with you a little bit later on in the year.
Too easy.
Seeing, whatever the rest of the year is going to, how that's going to play out. Exactly right. But thank you, man.
No worries. Cheers. No working fires.
No working fires. Look, before we wrap up, Isaac, I just wanted to tell you what my biggest takeaway, I don't know what it was for you, but what my biggest takeaway was from my conversation with Lockie, and that was, why is it when you're hallucinating that you always hallucinate the object into a far more frightening figure and not the other way around? For example, why don't you ever hear stories of someone hallucinating like a nice, soft, king-size, sealy, posturpedic bed with like a down quilt that turns out to be, you know, a mountain lion? It's always the other way around. It's always like, oh, I saw a mountain lion, but it was like a rock.
I mean, I don't know the answer, but I would say it's definitely, well, I shouldn't say definitely because I have no idea. But I could guess that it has to do something with, you know, they're just surviving, making it through. But that's a question for the audience. And I think if anyone has an answer, that'd be great.
Well, that's about enough of that. Thank you so much to everybody for listening to the second episode of the podcast currently known as the Thereabouts Podcast. And we've got a few more episodes coming in hot over the next few days and weeks. So make sure you keep your ears to the ground for those.
And in the meantime, make sure you subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And also, we really appreciate all the feedback and the questions that have been sent in. So please keep that going. And if you have any questions, recommendations, people you want to hear from on the podcast, hit us up on Instagram or our email address, howdy@thereabouts.co. And we'd be excited to hear your thoughts. Thanks everyone for listening. I'm Isaac Carson.
And I'm Angus Morton. Take it easy, stay safe, and be courteous out there.
It's sort of like the NPR, you know, channel where they have all those awesome names.
Exactly.
Lashmi Singh. And, I don't know. It's cool how they start. Yeah. Every hour. This is Let Me Sing. I'm here in Washington, D.C.
Exactly. Anyway. Angus Morton doesn't have quite the same ring to it, does it? It doesn't have the same, like, suede smoker's jacket feel.
Same with Isaac Carson.
And, like...
The devil is out to destroy everything good that God has in his creation, including Australia and the United States and what have you. Anyway, you guys got a lot of grit.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.